jumping off points. Yes. Cliffs of Dover.
I like that song.
It was in Guitar Hero 3.
I prefer the song.
I prefer the song, too.
The Golden Gate Bridge.
Is that a song?
That's a good one. Golden Gate.
It's a jumping off point.
Oh, that is.
It's a very popular one, actually.
Diving boards. Mm.
Okay. We can do a little bit better.
If you want to.
Trampolines.
All right.
No, that's like a jumping on point.
It's kind of a cyclical loop.
Well, usually you don't jump off a trampoline unless you want to risk a sprained ankle. You'll slow yourself down and then you'll kind of walk and.
I think we've all done that once.
Yeah. All right, I'm done.
And that's how you learn.
For who did it go
and
well?
And then our parents like pretend to be concerned, like, oh no, are you okay?
When really they're like, oh, I almost had one less kid. That'd be awesome.
Well, I was just thinking like the parents are secretly laughing inside. I feel like parents are usually laughing when little kids do dumb things. Yeah. So.
It is a good song, though.
Cliffs of Dover?
Cliffs of Dover, yeah.
Of course it is.
I agree.
Guitar Hero, man.
Will's back.
It's Will.
Hey, Will.
What's up? How's it going?
Late as usual.
Oh, Will.
All right, Will. Get back in your corner.
Go away.
and we'll hear from him in like another 15 episodes, guys. He's like very casually there.
Hey, Will, come here. He's going to take forever.
Taking his sweet time.
Oh, here.
Willy boy.
Come here and say hello and welcome to Foire. But
welcome
hold the have you even done this before? Hold the foire as though it's like a singing note. Get into
okay. A singing note? Sorry.
Like hello and welcome to just sing a note when you say foire. Right. Into the mic. Come
hello, on. Welcome to foire.
No, you gotta hold. You gotta hold it. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Why was getting it?
Why did I think he was gonna succeed?
Well, hello,
everyone. Hello, welcome to
I feel foiry. I feel foiry.
Oh, so foiry and foiry and gay.
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 Are we harmonizing on that one?
Gay.
Gay.
Well, we're all ghosts.
That's right. We did discover earlier that we
guys,
are
let's ghosts. Let's pretend to be ghosts real quick. Oh, I'm dead.
Your ghost sounds like Jeff Goldblum.
That'd be a great ghost to be.
I'm gonna call you Jeff Goldghoul or Jeff
Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum.
There you go. That was the pun.
I like it.
Yeah.
And if you were made of stone, you would be Jeff Gollum.
Golem or Gollum? Those are two different things.
Aren't golems made out of clay?
I don't know. It's a Pokemon.
Maybe that's what I meant.
If you were made out of gold, you'd be Jeff Goldblum.
I thought you were just going to like say something completely different.
There you go. If you're a fan of the World Cup, you'd be Jeff Goldblum.
We're gonna harmonize the yells.
Your neighbors must hate us.
Everyone, welcome to From Under a Rock, the podcast where we pick a movie that one or more of us has not seen yet that they should have, bringing them out from under the proverbial rock. I am Ryan.
I'm James.
I'm Michael.
I'm Steven.
But by the end, you will know us by different names.
Yes.
By the end, we will have
transformed,
metamorphosized. Yes, we watched Kafka's enduring classic, Metamorphosis, for the podcast today.
You could say it's metamorphin time.
You're fired,
guys. Can we be pissed off, ghost, real quick?
I thought it was great.
Sorry, I had a lot of stress today.
James, what has been stressing you out today?
Well, you know, I wake up on my couch today. I'm staring at a live tiger.
Why were you?
Just in the middle of my living room. Do you believe that?
I don't.
I didn't.
Me neither.
I didn't until it started mauling me. You see these gashes? Look at that. That's horrible. I had to go to the ER for 6 hours.
Is that why you're a ghost?
Oh, yeah, I guess that's it.
Oh, it's too late.
You know what sucks?
Oh, no.
That, like, your ghost form takes on your last physical appearance right before you died, so you're just forever a gashy ghost.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he's just forever ugly.
But the mauling had nothing to do yeah. with that little...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you don't need to have sex as a ghost, so the ugliness just kind of helps but, being but scary.
Does the drive go away?
The drive?
Yeah.
The sex drive? No.
To kill.
No, the sex drive does not go away. It's an endless, like, you can't jack off with a ghost hand.
James, you know, James, how was your life pre-ghostification?
Oh, pre-ghost?
It was going fine. It's great. Yeah, I just started my new job.
Not so
jacking off.
Yeah,
I was jacking off.
Usually, and and that's actually what landed me the job.
Is it your job?
It's some kind of job. Okay. It's a hand job.
That was too easy.
Guys, can we be like jaded ghosts right now? Like, Michael, what about you? Anything fun or exciting?
I went to a Queen concert last Thursday.
That's right.
Boom.
That was pretty amazing.
I'm pretty jealous. Seems like it would be a lot of fun.
Was Freddie Mercury's ghost there?
No.
Was he there in spirit?
Adam Lambert was the front man, and he was great. And there were a couple moments where they put Freddie up on, like, the big screen and stuff. And they did a bit at the end of Bohemian Rhapsody, like, the last few bits of lyrics. Nothing really matters. Anyone can see that part. They were having the video of Freddie alternate singing with Adam Lambert.
Oh, that's really cool. Wow. That's a good that's really tasteful.
Yeah, and they did a couple things where Freddie was the one providing vocals. I can't wait until the hologram technology is where we can have an entire Freddie Mercury concert.
We brought
Tupac back.
That's tough to say.
Yeah.
So I was talking with you a little bit about this, and you know, kind of despite whatever your feelings may be on Adam Lambert, he, you know, I watched some video of him, and he does a fantastic job of it. And I was just really curious how he, of all people, ends up getting that job.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the band approached him.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, he's a very similar type of performer as Freddie Mercury. Very similar presence. And I think it's either Brian May or Roger Taylor of Queen have gone on record and saying they think if Freddie Mercury could have handpicked a successor, they'd pick Adam Lambert. So that's a pretty, yeah.
That's really cool. It's also a lot of pressure to place on the poor kid's shoulders.
You could say he's under pressure.
Bum, 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 ba, bum, bum.
Steven, what's going on with you, sir?
Been watching a lot of stuff. One of my film professors from back at UT, her feature film Hellion, has been releasing all around the country in kind of a limited theatrical release. Went and saw that and was blown away. So
it's starring Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul of
Breaking Bad. Fame.
Yeah, he's in that.
Question, was you being blown away by that movie, how you died and became a ghost?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
I still have my 3D glasses on. It's not in 3D.
Don't worry, guys. I'm still here to keep this podcast grounded in the physical plane.
Ryan's the link.
We're not drifting.
We're sticking firmly in this physical plane.
So if that movie's in your city, you should definitely go check it out. And if you're an Aaron Paul fan, you should check it out. Besides that, I've been experiencing a little bit of theater. James and I went to see our friend Sasha of Hyperdrive Pictures, was in a play. She'd been saying for a while that she wanted people to go see her play. So James and I went to see it. We didn't communicate. We just both happened to show up.
Right. And we don't communicate.
Ever. And it was a little weird. I could tell something was up because walking in line, the people in front of me said, I wonder how sexual this play's going to be. And I'm like, what?
And it's like it's a normal thing.
That's a normal thing. And like, how much more is this one? And then I get into the space and they say, okay, there's no audience seating. You just stand wherever the play is and, you know, you can move around. The play happens in the same place the audience is. And I'm like, all right, that's interesting. Oh, and then when it's time for the play to start.
Sounds like a choose your own adventure play.
Kind of. They they close the door, like the audience is stuck in there. Do you remember that, James?
Yeah, well, like as soon as they close the door, I was like, oh boy, this is like, this is the actual space. This is where it's going to take, like everything's going to happen. So, you know, like it's a pretty crowded room without the stage actors there. So,
and then it starts, and then the actors all come in, and they're doing this really abstract crawling and making animal noises. And
it was it was very artsy, very interpretive, dancey. But one of the lead guys, he was surrounded by his fellow actors
in like a human pile.
Yeah, it was like they were all over, and like you couldn't really see him. And then they kind of like recede and back off, and
the lights go down.
The lights kind of
then
go
they come
down.
Back up.
Uh-huh. And then he's just naked. It was very. I was like, "Is that a penis?"
And we look at each other and we're like, "What did we get into?"
I gotta know, was he hard?
No, no, he wasn't. Actually, like after the play, some people were like, "Why didn't you get a fluffer?" You know, like
were they saying?
Well, interesting thing is apparently it wasn't planned.
Yeah, so we're waiting after the play for Sasha to be like, "Congratulations on whatever we just saw,"
and she's too busy getting that dick.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, really? No,
I don't know.
That
I wasn't
was
there.
No, and the first thing she says, like when she walks out of the play, before anybody can be like, "Oh, good job," she's like, why was that guy naked? And we were like, that wasn't part of the play?
It's like, wait, if you didn't expect it, who did?
No one.
Wait, but did she say it as though that was an audience member, not a performer? Like just some guy took the...
Who was that guy?
There was one guy really trying to get into the play. Remember that old guy?
The Nike guy?
The Nike
guy. I actually
guy.
Met him at the party afterwards. I went to their closing party deal, rap party.
More like unclothing clothing.
So this guy at the play, you know, you can move around in the space, and there's like a lot of like random making out in the play. There's no, that just people make out.
Yeah, it was,
and then,
there was a lot of making out.
And he would like walk right up to him and kind of be like, yeah, all right. Like right next to him, like, yeah.
He was actually a super nice guy.
Oh, I bet.
His name's Life.
Well, with a name like that. But
and he's just living.
And then... So that was crazy. Besides that, I you guys might be interested. I saw DBZ Battle of Gods, the English dub. It fixed a couple things that we were complaining about. And then the Sailor Moon Crystal.
Like the movie?
The movie. They're actually adding
new
footage.
They fixed the whole thing?
No, they added in some tension with the voice acting. But it was fun to see all these.
Well, that whole movie was making me tense with the voice acting.
Yeah.
So hey, I don't know how they could add more.
And Sailor Moon Crystal, first episode. Yay. It was beat for beat the same one from the first one.
I don't know what you just said.
I don't either. But
James does.
Is it anything like Pepsi Crystal?
Crystal Pepsi?
It's more of like a vanilla Coke.
Yes.
I've always wanted to try that.
I never tried Crystal Pepsi. Hmm. It was like basically just the same thing, though.
Well, it was literally just out in 1993, and that was it. So,
I don't think
And Ryan couldn't have had it because he just missed the 90s.
I was not alive.
He would have hated
for
it.
That.
Yeah.
Not that I wasn't born. I just wasn't alive.
Guys, you know what I miss?
I wasn't really alive.
I miss Life.
The guy?
The guy.
No,
play?
Like being a human form.
I miss the cereal.
Yeah.
Cereal's good.
It's pretty great, guys.
Would try
say.
Again.
Also, the board game.
Anybody ever have Life while playing Life? Ryan, what have you been up to?
Having a life.
I've had somewhat of a life. I moved into a new home recently. I went to a nice little 4th of July party last Friday. I went on a 6-game win streak at the cornhole tables.
That sounds so wrong.
Can you repeat that?
Nope. And then Clark Duke showed up at our party randomly. Do you guys know who that is?
It rings a bell. Who?
He was in Hot Tub Time Machine,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct.
Wait, really?
Which guy in Hot Tub Time
Machine? The kid. Like the
younger dude.
Dude, that's awesome. Where was the link there? And what party?
I have no idea. Like, I barely had a link at that party. It was,
was it at your new house? Or
no, it was at, I don't want to say. It was in the Palisades.
I don't know where.
It's by
I probably
Santa Monica.
Don't know
Pacific
does.
Palisades over by Santa Monica.
Okay, that's a ways away.
And yeah, we were just like hanging out and... drinking beer and stuff, and then we look over to the gate and some people are walking in, and I just turn around, I'm like, is that what's his name? Because I didn't remember his name.
You know, I have never been to a party with an A-lister.
Really?
So that must have been really cool.
Well, he's not really an A-lister, to be honest.
In my world.
Yeah, B
or C. Hey, he may listen to this podcast.
If he does, that's great. write us in, fuarock@gmail.com, Clark.
Is he not even status enough to invite him on?
I mean, that's why he just showed write up to the party, in. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah, he will just make us watch Hot Tub Time Machine, so I don't need to again.
Yeah, that's all he would talk about at the party. He was just like, you guys ever seen Hot Tub Time Machine?
Wait, is that for real?
No, I didn't actually talk to him.
Oh, okay.
Aww.
It's like, oh, man, he's not like that,
My friend was just... I kept talking about him, and my friend was just like, don't quiet down. I don't want you to bother him. So it's just like, I don't know.
I just want to know how John Cusack is in person.
I would guess kind of a jerk.
I've heard kind of a jerk, yeah. But I want to get it from Clark Duke's mouth.
Write us in, Joan? Clark. Let us know the truth. Here, if you want to write in anonymously and tell us how John Cusack is.
We'll tell everyone a listener with the initial CD says John Cusack is a turd.
Christopher Demarius.
That's an awesome name.
Sounds right.
Christopher Demarius Thomas.
Ryan, what
guys,
about you?
Guys, I'm very happy have gathered you all, living or dead, here to watch West Side Story together.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, the concept of time for ghosts really isn't that big of a deal.
You didn't have any other big plans?
No, it wasn't like, well, I got to go to that thing. I don't have to go.
It's more like
a ghost.
It's more like, oh, I should jump back in time 1,000 years so that I can watch that movie again.
Yeah, I should drift through that plane.
Oh, hey. Actually, you know what? It's probably cool if we're all dead. Say whatever we want.
Guys, can we pretend to be ghosts that are intolerant of racial slurs real quick?
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh. Hey now. Ooh. Watch it. We're the best ghosts.
So, James, you picked West Side Story for us all who had none of us had seen it before.
I know. That's crazy.
Why did you make us?
Whatever you phrase that. Why did you make us watch this movie?
This movie is one of my favorites. I know I say that a lot, but it's true. I've got a big soft spot for musicals. I know that's not everybody's cup of tea, but I really enjoy West Side Story. It's a fantastic film, in my opinion, and winner of 10 Oscars, including Best Picture. For 1961?
Well, you don't have to brag about it.
Just stating some facts, yo.
I disagree.
God, every opportunity you get, you bring up all these Academy Awards that the movie you picked won. And just like, oh, enough already, James.
All right. Well,
that's just your opinion.
It's a cool movie, and it's got dancing. Is that enough of a reason?
Dancing?
That's your opinion.
No.
It doesn't have dancing. It has dancing.
Oh, dancing. Wink, wink, nudge,
nudge. It has hella dancing.
Hey, guys, can we stop for a second and just all be ghosts who are realizing Michael doesn't know the difference between opinion and fact?
Okay. I think we were all on the same page there.
Yeah.
So, tell us, when did you first see this movie, James?
I probably first watched this one, was made to watch it in theater. When I was like in middle school, so I was like 11 or 12 probably. And at first I was like, oh man, we gotta watch this lame ass thing. And then everybody was like, ha, this movie sucks. And I was like, totally right. And then I was like, Dad, I wanna rent West Side Story. like everybody then, hated it except for me.
And how did they come into your dad comes into your room and you're like dancing.
He's like,
my son,
would come.
No.
How did your father react to your coming out?
He's like, kind of gay, but all right. Literally.
Yeah.
Why? So that's really something to go up against your crowd of friends when you're at that
middle school
age. Yeah. It's when all you're trying to do is fit in. You wanted to stand out.
I had a tough time fitting in.
All he wanted to do is dance.
I've seen pictures of you from high school, so I can understand why.
I was not a popular kid.
And I've seen your Texas driver's license picture.
That's
the one I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay. I look like Michael Jackson.
So yeah, what made you want to love this movie so much?
Well, I feel like, especially growing up, I was like the idea of that sort of love story always was really cool. A musical love story. The
one
Romeo
based on sodomy.
Guys, can we pretend to be ghosts that are just like kind of taken aback? Just oh no. Yeah, I don't know. It was just a different sort of thing that than I was used to in my films. Like I guess when I growing up, I always thought of musicals as animated features, and then you know seeing like a classic live action film was you know it was something different, and I really really appreciated it, and it kind of spawned like a whole string of me watching, like especially in those years, like this, The Music Man, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Singing in the Rain, yeah,
The Pick of Destiny.
That's a good one. That's another classic.
Nice.
One of my faves.
Maybe West Side Story was James's pick of destiny because it brought us all together once again.
Oh my God.
If Michael had been alive right now, he would have been dead. Right there. That's how surprised he was. So yeah, West Side Story has spawned several iconic tracks. That are still in the lexicon 50 years later or something like that.
Can I tell you my favorite one?
Please.
But I will tell you the title as though...
Oh, I thought it was But.
But.
I will tell you the title of it as though I was making a Weird Al-esque parody of it and see if you can figure out what the song from the movie is. All right, so...
It's been.
I go... No.
Cheese pizza. No.
I go to a strip club. I got my hands out and I feel titties. Fake ass titties.
You know, really, they usually don't let you do that.
That's not true.
And go. I got kicked out of the club for sure.
There you go. That made it more realistic. Thanks.
Go to the Spearmint Rhino in Las Vegas. They have a very strict no touching policy.
From Under a Rock does not support or condone
the
recommendations of Mike Morales.
Their no touching policy is if you're not touching, why not? Come on. I literally had a stripper there grab my hands and put them on her boobs. I was like, I
can't tell
I'm
if you're
so alone. No, I'm dead serious. She's Brazilian and I fell in love and that's why I root for their soccer team.
Did you get her name? You're like,
I did not, and it is one of my biggest life regrets.
Sherry? Was it Crystal?
It's a nice Brazilian name.
It's a nice,
good
yeah.
Brazilian.
She was the girl from Ipanema.
Oh, okay. So I believe you're talking about I Feel Pretty.
Yeah. I Feel Titties.
I don't think
that wasn't too much of a stretch.
I don't like to think that Weird Al would do something so crass.
I'm a filthy Weird Al. I'm Dirty Al.
Strange Al.
Oh, Strange Albert.
Guys, do you know what my favorite song in this movie was?
What's that?
Maria.
We had this thing that was like, what if Tony's tick was just saying Maria, like. Like he had to, it was Tourette's almost. Like, I gotta tell you something, Riff. I can't be in this gang anymore, Maria.
Why'd you lick your lips at the end there?
Because he's staring into my eyes.
Got a tip.
I'm sorry, like, there's a moment here.
I lost
a little bit of my soul to those eyes.
It's worth noting that James and I are sharing a microphone right now, and we are
very
bonding.
Close.
Like, we are so bonding.
It's nice.
So, yeah, the soundtrack has really...
We're making it really hard for you to stay on track this week, aren't we?
A little bit. The soundtrack has really stayed in the lexicon, like I said. A lot of popular songs like I Feel Pretty and Maria. I am forgetting some. I'm sure.
In America.
I didn't know that one so much.
I don't know... the name of the song or if he'd even had a vocal part of it. I think it did, but the one that goes
Are you talking about towards the beginning?
Yeah. It was kind of like a recurring theme in the movie.
When You're a Jet.
Yep.
Is that?
Okay.
Yeah, that's
when
one
you're a jet, you're a jet all the way.
And when you're a jet, you're flying through the
air.
That
one I know the best, but I think that was from my stint in music school. We actually played West Side Story. So that's the one that stuck with me.
So that's another kind of interesting thing. There is an extensive soundtrack through this 2.5-hour movie, and a lot of it is just pure instrumental accompanied by dancing.
Yeah, Leonard Bernstein, the original composer, and one of the greatest American composers, I would say. I would say that there are definitely a ton of tracks that, you know, don't require vocal assistance to be, you know, full and like, I feel like each track is unique, but also are reminiscent of each other.
I was noticing very early on how intricately the dancing cues, like the body movements, matched every note. Like literally every note was represented with a dance move, and I thought that was amazing on the Strictly Dance numbers. Mm-hmm. Where I was actually not like waiting for the words to start. I was actually engaged by watching the physical movement.
Yeah, it was a language all on its own.
Yeah,
I would think. And the choreography is widely considered to be one of the most intricate captured on film
and impressive.
There's a lot of really great acrobatics. It looks like the actors themselves are performing it.
And vaulting
as far as I can
over
tell.
Tall fences.
That was actually pretty impressive.
That was amazing. It was like a 30-foot high fence, chain link fence that he vaults over, and that was pretty.
Then
impressive.
Flips over on the other.
We were all a little taken aback right there. Just
he's like, oh,
almost to the point of taking us out of the moment.
There's a stunt at the very beginning where one of them pulls himself up onto like just a pole, and mm-hmm. then he sits on it, and then he leans back.
There's
and flips
a lot
off.
Of that going on behind the scenes in this movie.
Ba-doom. He pulls himself up onto a pole.
So yeah, that's kind of the interesting thing about it being a musical is that for the first act, it does kind of clash a little bit with the gang culture.
Oh, definitely.
That the story is trying to portray.
We were joking about that left and right. Yeah. Like, this is the least menacing group of gangs.
Yeah, apart from it being, you know, in the 60s, you know, I'm sure they had tough gangs back in the 60s, and
there were tough people around in the 60s. I would say, but.
And these weren't really some of them.
I mean, and, they were in that world.
They're definitely athletic.
See, I don't even think so. I think you know, the second act gets a lot darker whenever two people get killed.
Well, because it takes place at night.
Two people get killed in the Rumble, and
there's even a song about it.
I think the rest of the play after that is. Them kind of realizing how petty their feud is and how they actually weren't as tough as they think they were.
How it's over the turf of a candy shop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Is that really where the intersection is? Just
I don't think
that
so.
Street? Or?
Is it?
Well, I know it's like, they say a street. I imagine it's a couple blocks.
That's kind of their headquarters.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You were talking about the choreography and how it, you know, by the second act, it kind of matches more and it isn't so contradictory. Except for the Cool It dance scene where they go into the parking garage indoors after one of the two of them have been killed.
Riff and Bernardo.
That was actually probably my favorite dance.
I didn't like that scene.
I like that one a lot too, actually.
That's one of my favorites, actually.
Oh, well, I guess I'm
Steven,
the only one.
Steven, you're the odd man out.
I'm the odd
man.
Yeah,
you gotta cool it.
Steven, you lose 40 points.
No, but seriously, there's like guys in that scene that are just essentially doing that, like, hey man, cool it.
Bang. Yeah, actually, Steven loses points.
Well, that's kind of.
I don't have a gun. Bang.
That's how characters in musicals express themselves.
No, I know, but it's just my thing with musicals is I have a hard time getting into them just because I, you know, since that doesn't happen in real life, obviously, you know, I can suspend my disbelief and there's parts of the movie where I suspended my disbelief. But when stuff like that happens, I just feel a huge disconnect with the characters. Like I can't really relate here. It's more the dancing than the singing. I can, like, if you're singing what you're thinking, I can get on board with that. But then the dancing, I'm like, I've never seen somebody move like that when they're angry. So I don't think you're angry.
At least none of them just got naked from the bottom of a pile. Point, Michael.
So yeah, the as I said, this play takes a really huge shift right in the middle. Whereas, you know, for the entire first half, I was thinking, oh, this is like a musical, so it can't really stick to the Romeo and Juliet formula that it's pretending to be. Because of course, it's got to be a happy ending, right? I just totally assumed that they were gonna twist it at the end and make it happier, but no, they really commit to a depressing ending.
It's slightly happier than Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah,
and
one of them lives.
One
of them lives, but she's pretty. I mean, she's kind of.
She's
get over
she's
it. Yeah.
She's
get
emotionally.
Over it.
She's pretty emotionally dead, at least at that moment.
Yeah,
she might get over it eventually, or well, she might kill herself. Who knows?
Well, I was waiting for her to kill herself because she has the gun. I'm like, oh, she's gonna, you know, she has a little monologue. Yeah, the first time
might be, that might be a little too dark for me.
The first time I watched it, I was like, is this gonna happen? Like, oh my god.
Well, I was kind of like, I mean, we all know the story of Romeo and Juliet, so I was just seeing how they would have her kill herself.
Spoilers. For Romeo and Juliet.
We were even joking around in the first act about how Chino was actually this hardened killer.
Yeah, and he was like, inside I was like giddy. I was like, yes.
I was thinking James is just sitting there.
Stoke the flames.
Yeah, we're just calling it like, yeah, Chino, he's going to be like the only one to have a gun and shoot someone while everyone else is dancing.
Yeah, because he wasn't dancing with the rest of them. So we were like, why isn't Chino dancing? Yeah. I'm like, well, he must
Chino
be.
Don't dance.
He must make up for it by being just a cold-blooded murderer.
The only actual sure gangster enough. Of the gangsters.
Oh, so speaking of murder, I thought.
Speaking of murder,
this is unrelated to the movie, by the way.
Speaking of murder, bam, bam, bam.
Speaking of murder, we're all ghosts, and please avenge us. But also, when the two gang leaders were the ones that died.
Riff and Bernardo, yeah.
Riff and Bernardo, when they're the ones that died, I was shocked at their commitment to kill off those characters, which to me were the most developed characters by that point in the movie. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'd argue Tony was up there with them in terms of character development, but I mean,
they're definitely some of the strongest.
Yeah, well, I'd argue, I saw that coming. Well, A, because of Romeo and Juliet, I think Montague, they're like the Montague of this movie.
Well, Bernardo's basically Tybalt. Yeah. And
does Montague
and Riff
die?
Is Mercutio.
Mercutio. M.
Montague
M
is the family.
Really, like,
that's right.
That parallel. Of
I mean,
story?
if you look at it, like watch it again, and you'll see like all of the like you've got Doc at the candy store, who's the priest. Mm-hmm. Right? There's no apothecary, but you know.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. It's
candy.
Well, pharmacy,
it's kind of a
drug store.
Yeah.
You know,
Chino's kind of the. Chino's like the prince that Juliet's supposed to marry that also guess ends up they kind of twist it a little bit like you said, right?
They don't focus too much on him and why she's not with him. He's just
a loser.
Yeah. Oh, poor Chino.
He's like, killing is the only way to get any recognition.
No, I mean,
killing's the only way to feel.
I called it A because Romeo and Juliet, and B just because in that kind of movie you need someone tragically close to both, you know, characters to die, and you know, these two characters are close to both Maria and Tony, so I was like, hey, they're gonna die. I don't know why you guys are so upset about it. I don't know. I saw it coming a mile away.
Okay, I'm gonna give you like a point just for that voice.
I don't even know what that came from.
You're still negative.
How did you feel about Maria's rebound?
What do you mean her rebound?
Like right
after her brother dies.
Oh, yeah,
at the
geez.
Hands of
well, it's like
mentors.
You were saying. Yeah, it's like you were saying. Grief is a natural
aphrodisiac.
Yeah, apparently. Jeez.
Yeah, it's I like, guess. Oh, come on. Like, we actually had the running joke that every time there was a song, everybody was just having sex.
Which is a great interpretation
like,
when
you
watch
kids
the
can't
movie.
Do, you can't do that in the park. You can't just go around fucking whoever you don't like.
It's just a bunch of dudes, too. Which, back in 61, and probably...
Don't you notice they're trying to get that girl out of the club?
Yeah,
it's like, hey,
we, like,
don't
hey
want
no, we
don't
need
over here.
Go be a girl somewhere else.
With your vagina.
I feel really sorry for like the two or three girls, other than Maria, that actually hang out around them, and they're just kind of sort of there.
And
but
listen
they keep...
to the podcast.
And listen to the podcast. The two or three girls that listen to this podcast. Yeah. I feel sorry for them. No, I don't. Thank you for listening. Don't stop listening. Share this with all your friends, please.
They're not real.
Aw.
So, back to the music a little bit. I am definitely more of a fan of the 70s to 80s era of musicals, basically the Andrew Lloyd Webber era, I would think.
Andrew Lloyd Webber.
I think he comes up with truly catchy tunes that also fit into the musicals, mm-hmm. rather than this sort of older stage play sort of style.
I agree
where the songs themselves are basically just lines of dialogue that are being sung. That's how I feel about it.
I'm not as familiar with. I don't. I can't.
Like it
name
doesn't.
Composer.
It doesn't.
Well, I these, get what you're saying.
These songs don't really have like a verse-chorus kind of feel. They.
Well,
they just kind
of America did.
Yeah, I'm not saying not all. I'm not saying all of them are like that. But.
Yeah. The. I mean, it's definitely like it feels almost like a symphonic transplant mm-hmm. in like a musical. You know, it's kind of like it has like a life of its own almost, because it's less structured in a lot of ways. I feel that like this one flows through the stop it. This one flows through the movie more than a musical with more like segregated songs. Mm-hmm. Speaking of segregation, racism is bad. And I think that's the
that is
thing we can take away from
certainly,
all of this.
That is certainly at the core of this movie. The Jets being the
Irish,
it's or Italian, Polak. European,
yeah, there are a lot of Polaks.
European,
yeah,
immigrants, and then the Puerto Rican sharks,
who were in bronze face. It seemed.
You know, towards the end of the
movie, I'm not 100% sure.
Towards the end of the movie, they looked authentic.
I'm sure.
I'm gonna say
that's some tasty Puerto Rican authentic stuff.
It tastes
Dude,
real.
Have you ever had Puerto Rican food? It's delicious.
I don't know if I have.
I don't know where I would look for that here, but I
Puerto
used to. Puerto Rico.
We're gonna take Steven's word for it on this one.
So good, so good. I'm actually really hungry now. You know what? Yeah, that's how they would solve it. Everybody, just have some Puerto Rican food.
How do you think this movie did, or the play did, at tackling this issue?
I mean, it was there, and it definitely had its stance on it. That hey, yo, this is it's bad that you're fighting, but it doesn't ever really say anything along the lines of, on the inside, y'all are the same.
Yeah,
you know,
it starts to here or there.
Yeah, it could have done a much better job of making race not be a dividing factor, but it decided to just focus on the gang culture.
That's the takeaway I got by the end of it. You know, when they're walking away and the guy's been shot, my takeaway was, oh, gangs are bad because this kind of violence happens on the street. Thank you, Michael.
It's like I think towards the end it's not about race, it's just about hatred, you know?
Yeah, like the ball is in motion. It's like there's almost not enough time to tackle it, because you know the rumbles happen and the rumble escalates way out, and then Chino's out for revenge. And
you don't tackle a ball. Have you even played sports?
These guys haven't.
So Natalie Wood, who plays Maria, is actually a American of Russian descent.
Yeah.
I knew something was up.
Born,
there.
If IMDb is to be trusted, she was born Natalia Nikolaevna Zakarenko.
Well done.
In California.
That's just your opinion.
In California.
So that's at least one example. I'm sure we could go down the cast and look for more, but that's at least one example of casting outside the race.
Tragically,
that the role
tragically
requires.
Drowned at 43.
Is that what happened?
Oh, yeah. Really? Jeez.
On the way to Catalina Island with her husband.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, there's some. I don't. Yeah, there's some. I guess some interesting facts about this movie.
So I think, you know, she still did a really great job, and she had a fantastic voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Actually, I'm not sure if she was dubbed. She really? Might have been. With
maybe. Interesting.
I'm gonna do some research.
Yeah, let's fact
like
check.
Like Zac Efron in High School Musical,
or Zac Efron in Neighbors.
Her accent was definitely a little played up. Obviously, I feel like
extra roll on those R's,
and I'm not sure, you know, that sort of casting outside of an ethnicity probably wouldn't fly today if there was going to be a remake, which I think there might be one in
I'm
the
sure
works.
There's been several.
Natalie Wood
there
singing.
Hasn't actually
really.
Natalie Wood singing was dubbed by Marnie Nixon.
Good job, Marnie. Didn't they learn anything from Singing in the Rain? Come on,
yeah,
you gotta.
Not sing in that rain.
Let Marnie have her moment in the spotlight.
You gotta get out of that rain. Get inside. It's dangerous.
That's the lesson I took away.
Singing is bad?
If it's in the rain.
You right.
Should, unless you're inside.
I was actually watching that earlier today.
It's a good one.
I haven't seen it.
What? Well, gonna have to keep a string of musicals going for Steven. Okay. Braveheart a musical?
Yes.
Okay.
Freedom! Freedom!
I now really
want
to watch it.
It's a Negro spiritual.
Freedom! Freedom!
It takes place inside of a church in the South. I did not know that about Braveheart.
Tyler Perry presents Braveheart.
Oh my God.
Oh,
what would Jesus Braveheart?
Well, it's actually Madea goes to Braveheart.
God. I had one mother point about the music itself. I'm very much a fan of musicals in general, but I am more of a fan of musicals with a lot more harmonization, a lot more intricate vocal compositions. And these, there were duets and group numbers, but a lot of times they were just sticking to the same melody across the board.
It's almost always somebody singing by themselves.
The exception, the big exception, I thought, was the song just before the Rumble, which is kind of a suspenseful kind of build-up with a lot of layered tracks and vocal harmonization. That's one of my favorite songs.
That one,
one of my favorite songs.
Like everybody all across New York is singing in that one. I like that one. I want to talk about the just a couple technical things because the visuals in this movie is amazing. The you know the colors, the color what do you call it, set design. They really worked well with all these colors and the lighting. There's a great moment where two characters walk into a silhouette, have a scene, and then walk back out into the light down some stairs. Just little moments like that, and there's some really impressive transitions where we kind of joke like, "Hey, am I tripping out here?" But you know,
at the time that would have been really hard to pull off.
Yeah, without a computer, I don't know how you would do that, unless you're just
layering
drawing
film
it,
and drawing. Yeah,
and you know, there's for a musical, like you would think, why would you do these complex visual effects? But it's amazing, and it kind of like throws you into the next scene. You're like, "Whoa, I'm here." And that's the thing. You're like, whoa, when did that happen? I'm at the dance at the gym now. And then, oh, now I'm in an alleyway. Whoa. Okay.
Whoa.
Because you're just like kind of in this moment of, wow, this visually is so awesome.
Hey, guys, just for a second. Can we all be ghosts that say whoa?
Whoa. Dude.
Did half of us do Keanu Reeves?
I kind of went a little Keanu.
I started Keanu.
I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm okay with it.
I'll allow it.
All right. Any more thoughts before we...
I don't remember the character's name. I said she was sassy during the American...
Yeah, I was trying to think. Anita, yeah.
She really
walks into the
her,
silhouette.
Her whole character.
She's one of my favorites as well. Yeah, she's definitely.
Hard on the outside and...
Yeah, she softens up towards the end once what's-his-name's dead. You feel really, really sorry for her.
Yeah, James.
You guys are bad about these names.
Well, there's like 50 people in this movie. I told myself when I saw like the opening scene, like, you know what, I'm just going to pick the top three or four people and remember those. And I can only remember two.
James, you were saying Anita's last scene was especially difficult for her, right?
Yeah. The scene where she's being harassed by the Jets when she's trying to get the good, like the word to Tony about Maria and running away and all of that, because, you know, despite all, she loves Maria. And the scene when she's kind of being molested, really, was really hard for her to film because the actress actually had been raped as a child. And so they had a really... like to calm her down and just tell her, you know, they're gonna hate us for doing this to you on screen, so like, you know, it's fine, we're not gonna harm you or anything like that.
And it actually does kind of start out as a musical version of a molestation scene where they're kind of spinning her around and taking her cloak,
but then they put her on the floor
lay another guy on top of her
in
basically
the weirdest, like, almost
they lower
comedic
him.
Way.
They lower
like,
him,
it's not meant to be funny, but they just, like, grab him, like, and fly him in, like, an airplane and set him on top of her, which is a very weird feeling to watch that happen.
Yeah.
Luckily, Doc steps in. But
good guy,
and
Doc.
And then they, Tony's own gang ends up being the death of him because of it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the true nature of tragedy right there.
I thought Chino shot Tony, though.
Well,
yeah, but the events that they spawn, you know, I mean, it's all like leading up to that point.
Because Tony was so upset because he thought Maria was dead, so he went out.
Yeah.
He left his hiding place.
Yeah, if they had just let her pass, everything would have been fine.
It's not quite as clean as Romeo and Juliet was, where it's just like he sees what he thinks is her dead body and kills himself.
She wakes up. I was kind of hoping that when Chino shot, you know, they're embracing, I was kind of hoping Chino would have shot her. Then he would have killed himself, which would have been a reverse of the ending of Romeo and Juliet.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, but it was still good. I enjoyed the ending. I was just...
Either way, Chino's bloodlust carried this movie.
He'll take it with him to jail.
I swear, watch this movie again and just focus on Chino. Like, every time he's in the background, you can just see death. You can see death.
There's one, speaking of, you know, set design, there's a scene where I think Anita and, what's his name, Bernardo? are talking in the foreground, and then very clearly highlighted in the background is Chino
just standing there watching. He,
there's like a spotlight on him too, and he's in focus. He's looking right at them, and
he secretly wanted Bernardo dead. He's always loved Anita.
He was in the shadows of that rumble, like waiting, and then someone else killed him first. He's like, oh.
Damn. By the way, the actor of Chino went on to play Odd Job in the James Bond franchise.
That's awesome.
Not true at all.
I would love that.
It's just my opinion.
That would be a you need to straighten these opinions and facts
in
out.
In my opinion, he plays this role.
That's what I'm saying. You're wrong. Your opion's wrong.
We can look it up.
Wrong opinions don't exist.
All right, James, you wanna rate it?
Yeah, I guess I'll start. It's a fantastic, you know, like I love musicals, but this is probably my favorite musical out there just because it's so, like, the score alone is fantastic.
We'll give our scores. Don't.
He's saying his score is fantastic.
Okay. My score to this movie. Mwah! Beautiful. I would say that sometimes the acting can come off as a little cheesy, but it definitely gets a lot darker and a lot more serious towards the end, which I appreciate. I actually really enjoy films that start off kind of quirky and then end dark. I'm going to have to give this one.
You have to.
I have to. I'm going to have to give this one an A+.
Okay. Yeah. Liked this movie. It was a little tough to get used to at first, just with the clash of the gangland setting and the musical style dancing. It was a little tough to get used to, but I did, and I definitely did enjoy the dark second act. But what really makes or breaks a musical is the soundtrack, which just didn't quite make it for me, I think. I'm gonna give it a B.
I'm going to agree with Ryan about pretty much everything he said. There's that clash of the music versus the tone of, you know, gangs, and it's hard to get used to that. And I think part of the reason I have a hard time with a lot of musicals is because I get the idea of the song in like the first one or two verses. Like, all right, I know what the character's feeling, but then the song keeps going. I mean, this movie was 2.5 hours long with some intermission. But still, you know, there's a lot of kind of dead time where I'm just like, all right, I get it. Let's move on to the next thing. Only one of the I Feel Pretty was a memorable song, mainly because I think that's the most popular one from it. It gets referenced a lot. Story wise, you know, it's classic story, Romeo and Juliet, very tragic, done very well, adapted to 1950s New York, put a little bit of a race factor in there. I'm going to give this movie a B+.
And I don't particularly agree with your point of, well, I mean, I understand your point of kind of wanting things to move forward. You understand what they're feeling. But in a musical, it's not about just getting story out there and moving on to the next thing. It's kind of about dwelling in the art form of the music and the dancing and the performance around the art, not necessarily plot. Plot doesn't really come first.
Yeah.
Performance does. And I thought that performance was great. I kind of agree with Ryan and that the soundtrack wasn't everything I wanted it to be, but I recognized so much of the music as classic and iconic, and the performances of them, regardless of my feelings about the composition of it or at least the lasting effect that it'll have on me, the performance of them all was usually pretty great, even if the performance of their acting wasn't. This movie left me with a very good impression. I don't know how many times I'll watch it again, but I'm very glad that I've seen it. I'm going to give it an A-.
That's right. Going to leave us at an
A.
A? Okay.
A-. Sorry.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Damn it. You're right. You were right all along. I mean, at the end. Hey, man. It's just my opinion. Your opinion is right.
Is in fact valid.
So I guess nothing left to do but go on to the challenge. Challenge.
Challenge.
That actually sounded really good.
Your neighbor's gonna come over. What the fuck? No,
we should make the four musical, the farcical.
Farcical.
Who dies in that one? Is it me? It's me.
Probably all of us. We're all ghosts.
We're already dead.
He's the one who walks in and sees all three of our dead bodies, and then kills himself. But then the three of us were just sleeping, and we get up.
And then y'all kill yourselves.
No, we don't care.
We just walk away.
We just don't care.
We're like, I guess
Steven's dead.
Plot point.
James, what's our challenge?
Okay, so the challenge for this week will be, as we have already touched on, this was definitely a Romeo and Juliet adaptation, but set in, you know, the west side of New York City in the 1950s. My challenge to you is to come up with a stage play, Romeo and Juliet adapted, but you've got to come up with a different time. It can't be the 1950s or the original time of Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet.
So time and setting are going to be what I'm mainly looking for here.
How much detail are we giving you? What all are we...
What's I mean, as much comes to mind, but I mean, it's the real thing I want you guys to focus on is coming up with two characters that are star-crossed lovers that can't be together, and I want you to tell me why. So it's going to be time, setting, and the main characters.
Can we take a brief intermission?
We can.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Can we all be ghosts real quick? But we're Canadian.
I went with Stevens.
I thought that's where we were going.
It was nice even split. All right, so are we ready to commence the
game? Who would like to begin?
I'll go.
All right.
Steven will go.
Okay, jumped right in there. All right, let's hear it.
The year is 2375.
Okay.
The Earth is completely torn by nuclear holocaust. Mm-hmm. The only surviving humans are on Antarctica.
Interesting, okay.
There are two classes of humans, the royals and the peasants. The royals obviously have all the technology and are using all the remaining world resources to keep themselves alive, while the peasants are starving in the slums, in the ice every day.
I have a question. Do they eat penguins?
The royals do. There's nothing left for the peasants.
Okay.
They eat ice.
Man, that's tough to go on.
And like algae, like, or whatever whales eat. Brill?
Krill.
I have a question.
Yes.
They eat brill cream.
Are humans and penguins the only things that survived the nuclear holocaust?
And krill.
Okay.
Okay.
Those three things.
Please continue.
But among the peasants is a scientist. A scientist named Barbara, and she has a plan to rectify certain things. She's going to fix this war before it ever happened. She's going to destroy the royal line who caused all this destruction in the past.
Whoa!
So she builds herself a time machine and goes back to about 1400s England. This is where when you think royalty, you think the British Queen, right? So that's where I'm pretty sure that's the only queen left. So you go back past the British queen we have now, way back to 1400s England, and she's walking around and she finds her target. She pulls out her future space laser and she's about to shoot this guy, but she can't. It's love at first sight. Who is it that she fell in love?
Can it be love in her sights? Can that be the tagline?
Ooh.
Oh, she's got love in her sights.
Genius. Yeah.
All right.
And she never misses.
Sorry, love in her sights. I like it. Completely forgot about that.
Yeah, Mike problems. Not you, Michael.
Mike Bourbon problems.
So
she falls in love with this guy.
She's got love in her sights. She can't bring herself to kill him and save the future. Instead, she falls in love with him and starts a family, as much as the people back in the future would hate it, because she has to like report in on them.
It'll also change everything.
Well, it's kind of like X-Men Days of Future. Well, I don't want to. Never mind. I might ruin something there. So she has
Days of X-Men. I don't want to. Never mind.
Is that a great, title?
Go see that movie, but I don't want to ruin the way they handle time travel because it's really done well. Anyways, she falls in love with this guy, starts a family, and you know she keeps telling him about how these two classes never get along. Plot twist: the man is Shakespeare, and he takes the experience and uses it to write Romeo and Juliet.
Interesting.
The end.
And the end.
Interesting.
That was the unknown until now subtext of Romeo and Juliet. Was
time
that
travel.
Juliet or...
Well, Romeo and Juliet, the guy-girl dynamic is switched. Yeah.
So Romeo is actually a woman from the future.
I see. I see. I like it. Okay, I'm going to give you... Actually, I...
Are you going to hold
off? I'll hold
off. Okay.
I'll hold off. Okay. But yeah, I'll hold off.
Okay.
Who would like to go next?
Do
you want to go?
It doesn't matter.
I'll go.
Okay.
James, would you like the rest of my Pop-Tart? Thank you. I haven't eaten all day.
I think every time I see you, you say that.
What, James, would you like?
James, are you okay?
Even when he's not there, I'm giving him my Pop-Tart. Eat.
Yeah, you're always like, oh, sweet, I haven't eaten all day. I'm like, are you okay?
I don't have any food at home. Continue. So, I'm going to do the exact opposite of what Steven did. There's not really time travel. There's not a distant past. There's not a distant future. The year is 2006. All right. What's more important than anything else on the planet in the year 2006?
Penguins.
Famous people.
Oh, of course.
As with any year.
As with any year. Who is the most famous of them all? Around 2006.
Morgan Freeman.
Yes.
Second most famous, Britney Spears.
Oh, I was literally going to say that. I was like, right before the meltdown.
You should have done it. You should have jumped for it.
Britney Spears.
Britney Spears, A-list extraordinaire. Dancing to the top of her game and singing and lip-syncing her way to fame. Amassing millions of dollars. And you know what? She needs to date a famous person, right? Justin Timberlake.
I mean, they were both Disney kids.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Ryan Gosling. He wasn't that famous.
Morgan Freeman.
No, screw that. Who caught her eye? Kevin Federline.
Oh, my.
Background dancer. Trashy ass background dancer. He thought, hey, I'm going to use this bitch and make a music career of my own and skyrocket to the top. But she fell in love with him anyways because he's toxic.
But doesn't he know that he's toxic?
But the thing is, he's so lucky, she's a star. Because, oops, she did it again. She fell for the wrong guy. And this movie is about her marriage to K-Fed.
Wow. All
right. And then it takes a twist in act two. The Chino of the movie is also K-Fed. And he hits her.
Oh my.
But then he does it one more time.
Damn it. I wanted to say it, but I didn't want to ruin it for you.
But she loves it. She's like, that drives me crazy. I just can't see. I'm so excited. Fade to black.
She just can't see out of her left eye after he hits her. Oh,
I just... Wow.
And that's why the tears come at night.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Because he's a womanizer.
No.
I'm just going to say, I know someone who's listening. Emily, I hope you enjoyed that. That was all Michael right there.
All right. Impressive. Moving on.
It was all right, I guess. Okay. Now, the time... Present day.
Whoa.
The place is New Zealand and Australia.
All right. Ooh. Going down under.
Going down under, indeed. See, he is just a lowly Aborigine who lives out in the country. grows whatever they grow down there.
Bones in their noses.
Can't really.
Makes Vegemite.
Yeah.
There you go.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Does he come from a land down under?
The women rolling men.
He's plunder. A man at work. You know?
That's a great little hug there.
Oh, yeah.
What? I think I
just,
heard that.
Just a simple farm boy who could only ever dream of getting a woman like this. The beautiful Kiwi, what are they, like prime minister's daughter or whatever they have down there.
Whatever government that is.
And she's on a, you know, she tour? Her family goes and visits Australia for a diplomatic meeting, a meeting of diplomats. And, you know, this poor farm boy is just alone in a sea of poor farm boys. And yet he catches her eye, and just as she catches his.
And
but
sparks fly.
Can their love ever be allowed between such a pseudo-racial feud as there is between Australia and New Zealand? My story includes a lot of arguing that sounds kind of like, "Oi, mate, what you all about? You wanna fuck with me?"
That's how he won her over.
Governor, I swear on me mom, man.
Oi, governor, what you all about, mate?
You both sound like Ali G.
And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. That's about it. I like it. It seems like there's a lot of racial tension.
Yeah, exactly.
Something similar that mm-hmm. we've come to know about this movie.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the New Zealand girl, her name is Rachel, and the movie's called Rachel Tension.
That one went over my head, so I'm seeing some reactions here. I don't get it.
Oh.
Can we be ghosts that are fed up with Michael's bullshit?
Michael, I hate you.
That's pretty
That's
good.
Not very ghostly. you just sound like my dad.
All right. I guess we'll start from the start. It's a wonderful place to begin. Steven.
Ah.
That was a scared you really ghost. Had me with you really had me with the Antarctica and the penguin eating people. But you lost me a little bit with time travel.
Oh,
actually, time travel was great, but it seemed like that was a little far for her to go.
No,
to,
you got to stop it at the source. Once yeah, Shakespeare has his kids, then it, like it's a web.
So wait, is this a predetermined thing that it's royalty that will rule, like English royalty will rule?
I know
Antarctica?
Shakespeare wasn't royalty.
He wasn't royal,
but his kids and his like down the line. So she has to stop it way, way before.
If I had the power to go back in time and save my people, I'd probably just end up going and checking out dinosaurs.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to give you 4 points.
Okay.
Pulling him back into the positives.
Yeah.
Positives. Good job, Steven.
Yeah!
Now, will he be the first chooser of Cycle 9?
Probably not.
Michael, out. Your story was laced with lyrics. I love it. I love it. I will say, however, that Kevin Federline and Britney Spears did, in fact, get married. That's not the reason they can't get married. So you lose a little points there.
The drama takes place within their marriage.
I do like the fact that Chino, the role of Chino, is also Kevin Federline. Yeah, he's toxic. But, you know, I'm afraid I can only give you 3 points. 3 points for that one. Okay. Sorry. Ryan, I would say that your story probably had the best reason that the lovers couldn't be together. Also, an interesting locale with a lot of racial tension that has plagued it for
Rachel
centuries.
Tension. It could easily, Rachel tension. The twist that it's present day could easily wait till the end.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
I get the pun now. Thank you. I should have got that much sooner.
Boom goes the dynamite.
I was thinking, are there New Zealand actresses named Rachel? I was like, just thinking. Pun passed me right by.
Oh, God.
Maybe Australian Rachel. Is there
Where's my point for the Pop-Tart?
I don't get a point for the Pop-Tart. That's bribery.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was trying to do.
I think he should lose.
What do you
a
think
point.
Michael's doing here? He's here to
Ryan,
win.
You're getting 5 points because you had the story with the best tension, the best Rachel tension. So, Ryan.
You would give me a gold star and write, follow directions at the top.
Yes, exactly. In big green lettering. And that makes Ryan our winner of the week.
Yay.
Also, I pass you the torch of being first in a cycle.
For the first time.
Have you been holding onto that torch for this long?
I have been first in every cycle that I competed in. I did not compete
James,
in the Frozen episode.
James won the one that... you were not a part of, yes. That was the only one.
Taking the competition out. What can I say?
Out to dinner?
No.
Oh.
To destroy your enemy, you must know them.
Or you must be Chino.
Bam!
Bam! Chino. All right. So, Ryan.
All right, guys. Kind of want to do what Michael did here. I've got 3 movies to choose from. I want you all to come to a consensus of a number between 1 and 3.
I think the first one he thought to write would probably be his first choice for a movie. So I'm leaning towards 1.
Yeah. His favorite one. Let's do 1.
Why not? 1.
2.
Wait. Hold on. This is throwing a whole new thing in the spokes.
Oh, is that a ghost? I pick 1.
You have to agree.
1-1-1.
So is it 1 or
that's
2?
3 1s.
I would say maybe
one.
He threw us off. Maybe he threw us off with he would think that we would think that.
Yeah.
Psych. 2.
You picked a movie.
What's
I saw
Ryan's head.
I don't know.
Moving gears.
Yeah,
for sure.
Something fluid. He wouldn't expect a 2, so he had to put his
Yo,
best
can we
pick
ask
there.
A question? Is number 2 a comedy?
No.
We can't ask a question.
Let's go with 1.
No to the 1.
I'll go with 1.
1.
1. All right, 1.
All right. Our pick for next week is going to be, in fact, my favorite movie.
Oh.
Good logic there, Michael.
A Serious Man.
Never heard of it.
I haven't seen that one.
I haven't seen it. It's a Coen Brothers movie, right?
It is. It is indeed.
Ooh.
What's funny is that my pick would have been a Coen Brothers movie as well.
I thought about, you know, it's kind of a weird Coen Brothers movie to start on because there's so many more popular ones.
Has everyone here seen a Coen Brothers movie?
Yeah. One more fun fact. The directors for this movie shared an Oscar for West Side Story. The only other people to do that since then, the Coen brothers, No Country for Old Men.
Very cool. That awesome. Was a fun fact.
Fun fact, guys. <Ba-da-da-ba>. I had fun. Thanks, Michael.
So please watch Serious Man and write us in fuarock@gmail.com or tweet us at fuarockpodcast.
The cast, based on how he said it, is all caps.
And, check out youtube.com/hyperdrivepics. What's going on there, Steven?
Godzilla review. I've been working on that for a couple days. Y'all wanted one, so I'm giving it to you.
Fun stuff.
I was expecting that not to end there.
I'm looking at the waveform
you
here.
You wanted one, so I'm giving it to you.
Do-do-do-do. Yeah.
All right, well... Let's go around for one last roll call.
I'm Jumes McDoodles.
I'm Mike Bourbon.
I'm Steven Steuben, the Burbs Suburban Zarita, the Jerk.
Forget and I'm NP Ryan Evans.
Ryan. He's trying
Ryan Evans.
Trying Ryan Evans.
And to close, I'm going to say let's do an improv number song about popsicles.
Popsicles.
Can I borrow one of yours?
I
dropped my popsicle, guys. Thank you, Michael.
And sometimes I have jokes on the sticks. Goodbye, everybody!